This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, the Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. The majority of high-profile protests against Israel's assault on Gaza has been led by Jewish Americans here in the United States and groups like Jewish Voice for Peace and If Not Now. But you wouldn't know it from perusing corporate media coverage of the war. Today, we're going to remedy that on this program with my guest, Penny Rosenwasser. She is the author of the award-winning book, Hope Into Practice, Jewish Women Choosing Justice Despite Our Fears, a founding board member of Jewish Voice for Peace. She is a racial justice leader in her Oakland synagogue. She also co-teaches an anti-Arabism, anti-Semitism class at City College of San Francisco with a Palestinian colleague, and has chaired the Jewish Caucus of the National Women's Studies Association, where she is also a member of Feminists for Justice in Palestine, and she's an advisory board member of the Center for Jewish Nonviolence. Penny has been leading and participating in demonstrations against Israel's latest assault on Gaza, and she's just written an op-ed for Yes Magazine about what motivates her. Welcome to the program, Penny.
Thank you so much, Sonali. It's an honor to be here.
You start your op-ed talking about an image that is very traumatic and perhaps motivating in terms of informing your activism. And those are the disturbing images of Palestinian premature babies in Gaza hospitals. We're now hearing reports that Israel, when it forcibly evacuated Al-Shifa Hospital, at least according to one journalist, five premature babies died. It's a terribly heartbreaking piece of news to hear. Tell me about the pain you're feeling. I mean, you know, it's kind of a weird question, but I think it's an important place to start.
When I saw those pictures of those seven babies, some of them wrapped, I was brought to tears. I was a preemie myself. Mm-hmm. I was born a month early and I was in an incubator for a week. And what if there had been no fuel? What if I'd been in Gaza? What if there'd been an incubator with no fuel? I wouldn't be here. So I just saw those. I couldn't breathe. And I keep that picture on my desktop just to help me keep in touch with the horror that's going on in my name in terms of these Israeli bombs being dropped and, of course, being paid for with my tax dollars. You know, the U.S. sending $3.8 billion a year and now wanting to send a lot more, including these Hellfire missiles that are now going to be sent to Israel, the Israeli government. So I just, like many, many, many colleagues and friends around me, I just feel called to do whatever I can do to try to stop this. We will stop this. It's just when. We just have to stop this.
You're somebody who is a veteran of these movements. There's a lot of young Jewish Americans who are being activated, but you've been in the struggle for a long time. Tell me about Jewish Voice for Peace. You were one of the national founding members of the board, and today it has emerged as the leading Jewish-led organization that discusses Palestinian solidarity or solidarity with Palestinians. Tell me about JVP.
Yeah, I'd love to. It was actually founded in 1996 by three young women who were at UC Berkeley. And I got involved then, but then actually was part of a group during the Second Intifada, which was between 2000 and 2005. It was a small band of us in Berkeley who really helped build the infrastructure of JVP. And there were, of course, like any organization, many struggles and also triumphs. I remember when we closed down the Israeli consulate in 2002 when the Israeli army invaded Jenin refugee camp. And that kind of put us on the map. And by 2007, we'd boosted ourselves onto the national stage. And I'm really, I'm a member of the founding board of JVP and have been very involved ever since. And I'm honored to still be part of it and just feel, yes, it's so important for us to be raising a Jewish voice in this country. Again, to say, not in our name, never again for anyone. You know, we know what genocide looks like. It happened to our people. It wiped out to what every three Jews in Europe, one out of every three Jews in the world at that time. And we cannot let this happen to any other people. And the JVP actions, you know, I was not part of these, but I was thrilled to hear about them when folks, JVP activists and allies went to the Statue of Liberty and took over Grand Central Station in New York City and the Capitol building. And they also did a lot of these with If Not Now, another Jewish organization, a lot of younger generation folks, shutting down freeways. I think in Oakland, we sat in and occupied the Oakland Federal Building, 700 of us, over almost 500 of us arrested. One of the biggest Jewish actions, I think, in California history, maybe on the whole West Coast. This is to really just say that we will not be complicit. We will not be complicit in this horror that's happening in Gaza by the Israeli government and army. And our hearts also pour out to all the victims of the Hamas massacre, all those women and children and men who were killed in that horrific attack as well. Our hearts can hold all of it.
Right. Penny, you were talking about this idea of never again for a people that has experienced such a horrific genocide in their ancestral history. That same horror is sadly being invoked by Zionists who say that accusing people who have survived Holocaust of perpetrating genocide is an act of anti-Semitism. And I'm sure you've heard this over and over and over again, and we keep hearing that any act of solidarity with Palestinians is anti-Semitic. So let's deal with that. And you write about that briefly in your story as well for Yes. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. It's really important right now to contradict the misinformation that some groups are speaking about. It is no more anti-Semitic to criticize the Israeli government actions and policies than it is anti-American to criticize U.S. government policies. It would only be anti-Semitic if you were demonizing or attacking Jews as Jews. So that's very, very important. And, you know, both groups, Jews, Palestinians, a lot of folks of color, a lot of folks have undergone some kind of trauma, and that can really skew the way that we look at things. And so it's really, my book is a lot about that and saying it's really incumbent on us to face our fears, but not to act on them, so that despite all these fears, we choose justice despite our fears. And I actually want to bring in here my esteemed colleague, Irina Klepfitch, who teaches at Barnard about Yiddish and women's studies. Irina escaped the Warsaw Ghetto during World War II. She was 4 years old and she escaped with her mother. Her father was one of the leaders of the Warsaw Ghetto uprising, and he was killed in that uprising. And Irina is the one who has written about saying, our fears are real as Jews. They're rooted in history. But we can't let those run us. We have to choose justice despite our fears.
We are seeing rising anti-Semitism in the U.S. We're seeing rising anti-Arabism in the U.S. as well, and attacks against Palestinian students, Palestinian Americans, Jewish Americans. We're seeing this rise in hate crimes against both communities as a U.S.-funded and fueled war rages on the other side of the planet. It seems as though the corporate media doesn't know how to tackle this and continues to report on things so one-sidedly because there's a certain story that they want to tell, which is that Israel is a victim and that only anti-Semitism is something that we can talk about to the exclusion of anti-Arabism or anti-Arab racism. But those two things are so deeply intertwined, right? I mean, it's in erasing anti-Arabism, you might actually fuel anti-Semitism.
I think anti-Semitism, anti-Arabism, anti-Muslim racism are all rooted in white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And so when people are distracted by thinking that to criticize the bombing of Gaza is anti-Semitic, it takes away from the real threat in this country of white Christian nationalism. I
It's a
find it really,
distraction.
it's a distraction. I find it very, very upsetting, for example, that the Anti-Defamation League has called our Jewish Voice for Peace protests, again, protesting the genocide in Gaza, protesting the atrocity of killing a child, a Palestinian child, every 10 minutes, calling that anti-Semitic, when it's really protesting the policies of bombing that our US government is funding. It's not doing those kind of protests. It's not against Jews as Jews, but it takes away from the actual anti-Semitism that is definitely on the rise in this country, along with the anti-Arab racism and anti-Muslim racism. I think it's really important to fight all of it together. You know, it's the same machine that is the root of racism in this country, anti-Semitism, ageism, disability, ableism, sexism, all of those isms, I think, come from the same root, and we have to fight them in coalition together.
When you have traveled to Palestine, tell me about the interactions you had with Palestinians and their interactions with you as a Jewish woman and what you found there. Because again, our corporate media demonizes Palestinians, makes them all out to be, hateful against Jews for being Jews. What did you experience and was it different?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I first traveled there in 1989. I've been there 7 times. I co-led four Women's Middle East Children's Alliance Women's Peace delegations there, staying in Palestinian homes, in villages and refugee camps in Gaza and the West Bank, also staying in Jewish homes in West Jerusalem. So many stories. One of the things that first hit me was being in those Palestinian homes. It felt so familiar to me. Like we loved eating. We loved discussing. We loved arguing. We loved ideas. There was a lot of laughter. And I was really so surprised to find how familiar it felt to me. And they always knew that I was Jewish. I was able to visit Palestinian families and mothers who had just, their children had just been shot by Israeli soldiers. So to pay condolences to them. One story that I actually mentioned in the op-ed was in Gaza, and when we were in Rafah, our host Ali took us to where 20 Palestinian homes had just been demolished. It was like a whole area the size of a football field. It was horrifying to watch, and then we were able to visit a home that was nearby that was left standing, and in the children's bedrooms there were these big holes this big where our Israeli artillery shells had gone through. And I remember the mother there, I can't remember her name, but she was holding her son Dia in her arms. He was 2 years old, beautiful child with these bright brown eyes. And I remember he had pajamas with elephants on them, but he didn't speak because she said he was so traumatized from the constant shelling that he still didn't speak, and he cried most of the time. So many, many stories like that. And then I also want to mention this amazing graffiti on the wall of a camp in Khan Yunis refugee camp that said, "If you destroy our houses, you will never destroy our souls." And so the resistance and the dignity of Palestinians and the love and the humanity, I feel like is deep inside of me that was instilled in me from those trips, as well as the hearts of the Israeli peace activists, especially the Jewish women, who at that time were leading a lot of the Israeli Jewish peace activism, who were marching in the streets against the occupation. And so far, there's at least 35 groups in Israel that have come out for a ceasefire, even though the repression inside Israel now is very, very intense against any kind of support of Palestine or trying to stop the bombing.
Here in the United States, are you seeing a change in the kind of cultural fabric around this issue? We know, of course, that Palestinian students have been very active on campuses at universities, but what about Jewish students? Are you seeing a younger generation of Jewish Americans who are more progressive on this issue? You know, they're not the progressive except for Palestine, but they're actually progressive on Palestine too, more so now than in past years.
Oh yeah, there's been a sea change. I'd say maybe in the last 20 years, if not now, is one of the groups that's been leading that. There's so on a lot of college campuses, there are both Jewish Voice for Peace chapters and also Students for Justice in Palestine chapters that often include a lot of Jewish students. And these are, I think there's a certain kind of courage that they have that I always, I'm glad to be following their leadership, you know, to offer anything that I've learned from my experience. But I think these Jewish Voice for Peace, for example, is very multi-generational right now. Our Bay Area chapter has a lot of folks my generation leading it, as well as a lot of young folks in their 20s and 30s leading it. And I think that combination is very, very powerful. And a lot of these young Jews, and a lot of them are good friends of mine, grew up where they went to Jewish day camp or Jewish day schools, and they learned these values of justice and equality and fairness. And then when they, and they were not told about the occupation of Palestine and the siege of Gaza. And when they learned about it, they felt betrayed. You know, like, why did no one tell us about this? This doesn't work. This doesn't make sense with what we've been taught. And so they have fueled a lot of the shift in this country, you know, against what the Israeli government is doing, and saying we treasure our Jewish heritage, which I do very deeply, and also as a racial justice leader in my synagogue. And this goes against everything we believe as Jews. There's a Hebrew phrase, tikkun olam, which means the repair and the healing of the world. And that's what a lot of us hearken to. And when I was just at synagogue for a friend's bar mitzvah, the words that leapt out for me from Jewish liturgy were, choose life that you and your children shall live.
Penny, this idea of not in my name, let's expand on that a little bit. You know, people of morality, people of conscience see what's happening, unfolding in Gaza. And as you say, they can hold in their hearts the trauma for the Israelis who were brutally murdered as well. But this, do you feel that your background, your Jewishness, gives you more motivation to speak out on this because of, you know, what drives you, and whether that background, whether that heritage drives you even more?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's the Israeli leaders who are doing this bombing and running these policies are Jews, and I'm Jewish, so I'm implicated there. And everyone in this country, in the US, who pays taxes is implicated. So there's a lot of us as Jews who feel that, and it's not just a Jewish issue at all. And I one of the big things I keep thinking about every day is, you know, during the Nazi Holocaust, you know, again, which killed 6 million Jews, and of course killed, you know, gay folks and Roma and people with disabilities, many other groups. But I remember going to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and there were at least something like 10,000 allies who really saved Jews' lives. And today I think about the people that saved Jews' lives during the Holocaust and all the people that didn't. And what can I do today so that when I look back on this genocide that's happening in Gaza as we speak, what I just need to do everything that I possibly can to try to stop it as a Jew and as a member of a group who has undergone genocide, and thank God we've survived and are flourishing. But that feels that connection feels very, very important to me, and I think does to many, many of the Jews that are involved in this, that are fighting to stop the killing, fighting for an end to the occupation, an end to the siege of Gaza, really fighting. I mean, it's up to the Palestinians and Israelis there to decide, you know, what kind of government or life they're going to have. But what we're fighting for here is to really, in this country, is to push our government to pressure Israel to stop the bombing and to create an area where both Jews and Palestinians have equality, have freedom, have safety. One group's safety goes hand in hand with the safety of the other groups. And to have a part of the world where they all have equal rights, where Palestinians have the same rights that Jewish Israelis do.
How do you win the information war and break through the basically like a blackout on Jewish leadership in the protests in solidarity with Palestinians?
Well, thank heaven for the internet and for shows like yours and Democracy Now, you know, where which are really foregrounding these things. And you know, letters to the editor. I have a lot of friends and colleagues who have been getting letters to the editor done, op-eds. But I think the internet is the major way that we counteract that. So, but it just, you know, when I watch cable news, and I want to watch it because I want to know what people are seeing. And again, I really want to keep my heart open. You know, when I saw that one of the stories about one of the Israeli children, I think 3 or 4 years old, who was alive, and her father was killed while he was holding her, you know, and I just that breaks my heart. It's important to me to see all those stories. And I also just learned that a colleague of mine just lost a family member who was killed by Hamas. But where is the story about these 6,000 Palestinian children, you know, who've been killed, who've lost family members? There's, I think in the op-ed I talk about, there's the initials, it's wounded child, no surviving family. There are so many of them that
children
there's now
whose arms have bared those letters because people are writing them when they find children who've been orphaned. Yeah,
those stories. I'm glad the Israeli stories are being told, and so few of the Palestinian stories are being showed on the cable news networks that I watched, and it just breaks my heart. Because those stories are, you know, just as important. Judith Butler calls this the grievability factor of whose suffering is considered grievable. You know, it's all of these lives are precious. All of them deserve to be grieved. And we need to be hearing the stories of all these people, many Palestinians who've lost 50 members of their families. You know, that one story I remember that really hit me was when they were digging under the rubble, they were able to find a Palestinian mother who was still alive, and her children were found clinging on to her, and they had been killed. You know, so I could go on and on, but this is what just really enrages me in terms of the media, and breaks my heart.
Well, Penny, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And we will certainly share your story in Yes Magazine widely, and people can read it there directly and share it as well at yesmagazine.org. Penny, thank you so much.
Sonali, thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Penny Rosenwasser. She's the author of the award-winning book, Hope Into Practice, Jewish Women Choosing Justice Despite Our Fears. She's a founding board member of Jewish Voice for Peace and a racial justice leader in her Oakland synagogue. And she has written a powerful op-ed in Yes Magazine about her role in the activism around Israel's assault on Gaza. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org. Watch it on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.